Creating Space for Diversity. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 206.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, 'cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Dan Bublitz Jr. here with you again, as always. And it is Tuesday, June 15th, 2021. I hope everybody had a fantastic couple of weeks. I took last week off. I had to take care of some stuff. I took a vacation because I needed to get some stuff done with my car because I'm getting ready to go out on the road a lot this summer. And I had to make sure it was going to be roadworthy. I had to put in new struts. I put in a new axle, and I had to get a new sway bars, a windshield, all kinds of fun stuff. But it's road ready, and I'm ready to hit the road. And I'll talk more about that when I get to my housekeeping. But before we get to that, let's talk about who's on the episode today. Today, I'm joined by Seattle-based comedian Dante Barnett, and we talked a lot about diversity within comedy. We went in deep, so that's what you got to look forward to. I'm not going to spoil any of it. It was a great conversation, and I think you're going to enjoy it, and you'll probably learn something. Maybe you'll learn something. I always hope you learn something. But before we get to that, and before we get to the housekeeping, let's talk about this. Snow Jam Comedy Festival 2022. I am one of the board members, and we, yesterday, opened up submissions for the 2022 Snow Jam Comedy Festival. And submissions have been coming in very quickly, which is great. That means people want to do comedy, and I guarantee you people are going to come to the shows because people want to see comedy. What does that have to do with you? Well, if you're a stand-up comedian and you want to participate or be considered to participate in a comedy festival, I suggest you head over to snowjamcomedyfest.com, hit the submit tab, fill out all the details, and pay the submission fee, and you will be submitted for consideration for the 2022 Snow Jam Comedy Festival. Now, keep in mind, submitting does not guarantee you a spot, because there are only 30 spots available, and there's going to be way more people that submit than we have spots for. So keep that in mind. Submitting does not guarantee that you'll get into the festival, and there are no refunds. So like I said in last week's episode, or the last episode that I released, talking about the fellas from the World Series of Comedy, always do your research before you submit to any festival. If you don't think Snow Jam Comedy Festival is right for you, then don't submit. We're not going to be offended. Do your own homework. Go to the website. Check out all the details. I will say this. All the comedians that get selected get about 2 showcases, and we provide lodging. So there are a couple good perks if you get selected. But again, submitting does not guarantee you will be selected. If you're interested, go check out the website. There's more information, more details. SnowJamComedyFest.com. Now, the next thing I want to talk about is a book that I just read. I read this great book on stand-up comedy called Mastering Stand-Up by Steven Rosenfeld, and I highly recommend it. I really do. I've been doing comedy almost 11 years, and while some of the stuff is geared more towards beginners, there was a lot of information that puts a different perspective on comedy, not just writing and performing, but the business of comedy and just different things. And, you know, one thing that I really needed to read was one of the last chapters that I read called The Voice. And it talks about that inner dialogue that you have with yourself, that self-sabotaging voice that tells you you're not good enough, and how to combat that. And that was a great chapter because I needed that, because that's one of my biggest issues with comedy. I don't think I'm ever good. And you know what? I am. But that's my inner voice telling me, constantly trying to sabotage me from going forward. And that book gave me a great outlook and good perspective on how to combat that. But that's not the only thing. It gave me a lot of great insight on writing and performing and things that even at my level, like I said, it was still a good perspective. I've been doing comedy for quite a while, and I'm not a master, that's for sure. It takes years and years and years and years to master, and it never hurts to see a different perspective or learn comedy from a different point of view. And Steven Rosenfeld is a stand-up comedy teacher in New York. He's been teaching, I believe he has his American Comedy Institute. I believe that's what the school is. And he's been teaching comedy for years and years and years and years. And his students, his alumni, there's some good names in his alumni. So check that out. If you want to learn a little more about stand-up comedy, I highly recommend reading Mastering Stand-Up Comedy. And I want to give a shout-out to Emil, who took my class, my EPK class. He was the one that actually put me on this book, suggested this book, and I picked it up. And it was a great book. So thank you, Emil. I appreciate it. All right, now it is time to get into the housekeeping.
It's time for housekeeping.
All right, the first thing we're going to talk about is the Dan on the Run comedy tour. I have lots of dates coming up throughout the summer, but more specifically, I want to talk about what I have coming up this week, because it is Tuesday, June 15th, and I have shows from June 17th all the way through the 21st this week. That's right, I'm going out on the road. I'm going to be in two different states, four different towns. It's going to be fantastic. So the first show that I got coming up this week is Thursday, June 17th. I will be in Shawnee, Kansas at Harley's Hideaway Bar and Grill. I believe Shawnee is a suburb of Kansas City, Kansas. So if you're in that area, come out to the show. It's free. What? It's free. Can you believe that? It is free. And that show's at 8 p.m. Then on Friday, June 18th, there we go, June 18th, I will be at the Sault Ste. Tavern in Sault Ste., Kansas. I believe that show starts at 8:30, I think, 8 or 8:30, I'm not 100% sure, maybe I'm off on that time. And then Saturday, I'm going to butcher this name too, I will be at the Getaway Bar and Grill, not going to butcher that name, but I will butcher the name of the town. So the Getaway Bar and Grill, and I believe what is pronounced Shoenchen, Kansas. I probably got that wrong. I apologize if you're in that area, but I will be at the Getaway Bar and Grill. So check that out. And then Sunday, what are we up to now? The 20th, I think? Yeah, what is that right? Is that right? We got 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th. There we go. See, I got to count this out. June 20th, Sunday, June 20th, which is also Father's Day, you can catch me in Lincoln, Nebraska at the Zoo Bar for the Zoolarious Sunday Showcase. I'm headlining Zoolarious. I'm very excited about that. It is a fun Sunday show in Lincoln, Nebraska. So if you're in Lincoln, Nebraska, come out to that. That show starts at 8 p.m. So come to one of those shows if you're in those areas. Come say hi. Let's meet. Let's chat it up if you're a fan of the show. And let me know if you listen. If you come to one of the shows and it's because you heard me on this podcast, let me know that, because that would be really cool to find out. All right. The next thing that we're going to take care of is if you haven't done so already, and you can, though, go to the website, artofbombingpod.com. There's the Submit a Bomb tab where you can go submit your own bomb. You can write it out, and then I might read it on an upcoming show. You can even call the Bomb Squad hotline and tell it in your own words. I might play it on the show. Might include it in one of the monthly newsletters as well. And make sure, while you're at the website, check out some of our merch. We got them nifty hats, and they're selling pretty good. It is a great black and gold color, and the logo is fantastic. It looked really good. It's an embroidered logo, so it's all stitched, and it looks really, really nice. So you can get that on the website as well. They're $20 plus shipping and handling. And like I said, they are going pretty well, so get one before they're gone, because who knows, I may not reorder them. It might be the only run of hats that we do, and then you'll have a limited edition hat. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. Anyway, while you're on the website, make sure, or wherever you listen to the podcast, make sure you're following the podcast. Follow us on Instagram, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, follow us wherever you listen to the podcast. If you're on Spotify, follow us. If you're on Apple Podcasts, follow us. If you're on TuneIn, follow us. Stitcher, follow us. Google Podcasts, follow us. Amazon Podcasts, follow us. You get the point. Wherever you listen to this, follow the podcast. We would really appreciate that. And finally, the last thing I'll talk about, if you enjoy what I'm doing and you want to give me a little bit of a tip, you can do that by buying me a coffee or going to buymeacoffee.com/dbub. That's D-B-U-B comedy, and throwing a fiver in the tip jar. And that goes to show me that you appreciate what I'm doing. And that's the whole point of that. But again, the most important thing you can do to help us is spread the word. Make sure you're sharing the content when you see it. Go tell somebody about the Art of Bombing podcast. All right, this was a really long intro. I do apologize, but I had to take care of this housekeeping. Now, let's get on to the show, and let's get right to it. Here's a conversation with Dante. Enjoy.
And now, it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
Yeah, my name's Dante, but it's spelled all fucked up, though. Yeah, it's D-U-A-N-T-E. I get everything from Duante to Duant. I've even got Dwayne before, like the T silent and shit. Cold part, though, is first day of a job or school or shit, people really had the balls to ask me if I spelled my name right. Yeah, like that's not an integral skill of kindergarten and shit. But I'm kind of racially ambiguous, so I did my 23andMe to figure out what I was, and kind of fucking with my personal identity. Yeah, this whole time I thought I was an angry black guy. Come to find out I'm 60% white. Yeah, I guess that means I'm an angry white guy, right? Yeah, I gotta vote Trump next election, get a MAGA hat too, shit. The cool part is I like to fight stereotypes. I used to be an IT teacher at a community college in Seattle. And I know I don't fit the description, so my first week of class, my white students heckle me. They'll say shit like the floor's been swept, garbage's been taken out. But don't worry, I found a way to get back at them. Since I have a master's degree, I tell all my white students, call me master. Yeah, that's your Black History joke of the month. It's a little late, just like us. But the cool part is, I used to be a good college teacher, and people always ask me that same question, you know? They're like, why don't you teach like high school or middle school or elementary? And there's one reason. Yeah, it's quite simple. I like to fuck my students, and that's kind of frowned upon at those other institutions.
So have you been doing any live shows?
Yeah, actually, I've been, I'm live in Boise every month. I'm actually doing my own stuff in Seattle, Washington. Suitman Productions, we do a show once a month at Lo-Fi in Seattle. So, and then I'm in Boise every month with the Suitman Summer. We do a whole weekend. We do two different shows spotlighting minorities, one show each night. So that way each night you can come see two different shows.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, I seen that online that you've been doing a lot of shows to promote diversity and diverse shows, which is always great. Are you, how far is Seattle from Boise?
Seattle to Boise? It's about 7.5 hours.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's quite the trip. But as long as if you're going for a whole weekend, that's not so bad. Not so bad at all.
I usually have one or two friends going with me. It's not that bad of a drive, depending on which way you go.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little different. It's a lot of people ask me, like, why are you going to Boise to do comedy and all these different things? And it's like, because you've got to be better. Like, if I stayed in, you know what I mean? Like, if I stayed in Seattle and did what I was doing, it's going to work, but it's, my message isn't just like kind of, I kind of snickered when you said you try. No, that's who I am. You know what I mean? Like, there's no try. Everything I do is about diversity. It's not even so much about diversity. It's about opportunity. You go to your regular club and you go to a show and what do you see?
Yeah, white guy. Yep.
White guy.
Yep.
A couple more white guys and maybe one minority or two, one minority male and one minority woman. So, that really pissed me off. I'm not gonna, you know what I mean? Like, I don't.
I mean, I can't say that I know what you mean because I'm obviously, I'm the white guy that doesn't have the. But I totally see it.
But that's the problem, and that's what I found is I had all these white people telling me what was funny or not, and why I couldn't be on their shows, and I'm like, you fuckers aren't funny to any of the people I would hang out with. None of my minority friends find 90% of you guys funny. But since you're in charge of the clubs and the shows, you decide who does them. Mm-hmm. So guess what I decided to do? Run my own fucking shows. That way I could make sure that those people who aren't getting who are getting gatekeeped against and all that don't have to deal with that. And I really try to break it down with some guy who's like, well, what if I did an all-white show? I said, that's most fucking comedy clubs. I don't know. You don't need to call it an all-white show. Just call it the Laugh Factory on Friday or fucking Giggles on Saturday, right? Like, that's all it fucking is. And he said, well, why does it matter what race they are? Shouldn't funny matter? And I said, that's a way, white male superior way of telling people they don't book them because they're not funny to you. That's bullshit. If you're a Caucasian male, you're probably not going to identify with my nigga jokes. I hate to say the N-word on your show, but that's the truth. You're going to get mad when I make fun of crackers because you'll be like, hey, that's me. But every black person that goes to a comedy club listens to 10 black jokes that offend them to see one black comedian on their fucking show.
Yeah.
That's why I do my shit the way I do. All mine comics are going to be women, so that way they don't have to worry about hearing some shitty dick joke or rape joke, right? All nine comics are black or minority. So that way the audience can come and know that you're not laughing for the wrong reason. Mm-hmm. Right? Not only that, but you're not going to tell a joke about killing black cops, killing black people that white folks think are funny, but really just fucking enrage us. Mm-hmm. So it was one of those where I just had to do stuff because I was tired of. And then I'm not allowed to beat people up. I guess that's the other part.
Yeah, that's kind of frowned upon in entertainment.
Right? I've got the rap battle mentality stuck in fucking comedy, right? Like you say something.
Rap battle sounds more like you got the WWE mentality. And
you obviously ain't seen the rap battle. Hey, brother, are you a believer? And are you a suit maniac? Are you a believer, brother?
Ooh, there you go. Yeah. Hit it right on the head there. No, that's awesome. I've always believed that in comedy, I mean, the best way to get anywhere is to create your own path. Because even there's gatekeepers everywhere, and it's ridiculous. It's one of those things where with comedy, I think it's the dumbest thing as far as like, you know, there's so many people that want to gatekeep. And I you know what it is. It's having that control, having that power. That's the only thing they got, so they got to try to, you know, maintain their power or whatever. But it's stupid, you know. And a lot of times the only way around it is to do your own thing. And then people get mad at that because they're like, well, shit, they're doing their own thing and they're being successful. And it's like, yeah, well, you could have had that working with you, but you chose to gatekeep, so... Now
bingo!
Who's laughing?
Hey, hold up. Bingo! That's literally where the fuck I'm at. I'm at that crossroads of being an outlier and being successful, and so now people are mad that I don't work with them. It's like, well, you didn't fucking work with me when you didn't think this was going to work.
Yeah.
Like, why do you want to... I digress. But not literally digress, I get so fucking worked up and mad about this, and people really don't understand why. And I'm like, do you guys not fucking get it? And when white people, you know, get mad about racism or whatever, or about this, that, and the other, I just have to tell them, you guys are full of shit. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of people that are full of shit when it comes to racism and what they think they know and don't know, you know? I'm one of these people that I don't pretend to know anything because I don't. You know, I'm very well aware that I'm white and I have white privilege, and I'm very well aware of all that. And I try to, you know, be a better person and be a good person with that. But I totally see all these other people that, you know, other white people that are totally oblivious. And it's like, oh, you know, just it's so frustrating because you can't even have a conversation with them because they, you know, just choose to ignore it.
Well, they just get so mad. Like, that's the funniest thing for me is when white people get mad about me talking about racism.
Yeah.
Well, I'm like, not racist. Okay, I'm not talking about you then. It's the other 90% of you.
Right? Yeah. But, you know, a lot of times when people get offended by something, it's because, you know, they're probably projecting a little bit. So maybe you need to do some reflecting.
Bingo. Yeah.
Yeah, there's probably definitely some of that going on. Yeah. So you're based out of Seattle. That's correct, right? So
yep. Seattle, nice. Washington, Seattle, born and raised.
Yeah. Oh, nice. I have some friends out there, a few friends out there and I have some family over in Tacoma. I'm actually coming out that way in September just to hang out, but yeah, that's it's not a bad area. I was out there a few years ago. I did some shows, not in Seattle, but like outside in the Seattle area. I was at a casino, a couple of casinos. What's
which
that?
One, Emerald Queen or the Tale of the Two Winds or which one?
Tulalip. Does that sound right? I said it wrong. I knew I would.
Yeah, I'm part Native American and I'm from Seattle. It's Tulalip.
Tulalip. Okay. I knew I was going to say it wrong. I'm terrible at words. All words.
Oh, it's okay. It's just that is the joke of the town is that, you know, it's Puyallup, right? It's squim, not sequim, right?
Yeah.
In Washington, we have a high Native American influence on a lot of our names, so it's just something that I'm used to seeing. I just had to laugh because you butchered it like a motherfucker.
Yeah, well, and nobody that knows me, or everybody that knows me is not surprised that I would butcher a name, because, like I said, I have a hell of a time even speaking English sometimes. Speaking my own language. But yeah, so I was out at that casino, and then I did some shows down in Olympia and down in that area. Well, it was a good time, but yeah, it's I know because during the pandemic, Seattle and Washington was kind of a hot spot, one of the first hot spots actually. Did things shut down for quite a while out there?
Oh, things are still shut down.
Oh, are they still shut? Well, okay, it seems like things are starting to slowly open up.
So we're at 50% capacity.
Oh, okay.
But we're not. Live entertainment just started being able to be done.
So it just started back up.
Yeah, we've officially been able to do stuff for the last couple of weeks.
Okay.
And so it's one of those, it is what it is, you know what I mean? Like, I don't really, like a lot of people say, why aren't you doing shows yet live? And I did two, I did one at the end of April, and then I let another comic come up and do the psychedelic show here. But people ask me all the time, like, why aren't you in a rush to do comedy? And it was like, I don't want the responsibility of getting people sick.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people understood and get that is that if you're a small time producer and somebody got sick at your show, they could literally sue the shit out of you and own you for the rest of your life. Right.
Yeah.
And then the other part was that I don't think people really quite grasped how important Zoom shows are. Because there are a ton of people now that have been able to see comedy and do comedy that never did it before.
Yeah.
And so for everybody in such a hurry to, you know what I mean, get back out there, I don't think Zoom's going to go anywhere.
No, I think Zoom will stick around. They're definitely going to have Zoom shows, but I guess the way from my perspective, yeah, they're great shows, but nobody's making a ton of money on Zoom shows unless they're a big draw and they can, you know, like big name comics that have been doing some of that Zoom stuff that can draw an audience, which are the same ones that can draw an audience at a live show too. But,
bingo. Yeah, and that's where I told people, like, we had a post on Displaced Comedians the other day, and they were like, they asked something like, is Zoom going to die or whatever? And I was like, do you people know I'm still getting like 1,000 views? Do you know everybody on my show usually gets tipped? Like, if you're doing a unique set where black people want to see a show because black people are on it, or women want to see a show because women are on it, something that really hits home with somebody, you can still get paid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just think it's a lot of it has to do with people's lack of innovation. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's any other way to say it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that at some point, but even so, I don't think anybody's making a healthy living off just doing Zoom shows.
Oh, no, nobody's...
I mean, you might make some tips here and there and make some money, but no, you're not going to make a healthy living. That was where I was going with that.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think we make a healthy living off comedy either way.
That's... there's some definitely
more,
truth to that.
That's more what I was getting at, is that I think there's no... If there's a comic telling you they're making a healthy living and they're not Kevin Hart or one of those people, like, they're fucking lying.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I know quite a bit. I live in the Midwest, so I know a lot of working comics that do fine. You know, they make their living from comedy and, you know, live comfortably. So,
oh, no, don't get me wrong. And I didn't mean it like that. Don't get me wrong. I know there's money to be made. It's just I know for 95% of the people out there that say that, right? Oh, it's not happening. And if you're not, and I don't mean, you've got to do more than just your stand-up, right? They're doing voiceover work. They're usually, you're doing writing, right? There's, you're not just making.
Well, yeah, yeah. A lot of comedy adjacent.
That's what I'm getting at, is you're not just living off of your Friday, Saturday night stage time.
Yeah, yeah. That's very true. I can give you that. Definitely have to have that comedy adjacent stuff. Well, let's get into this. This the what my podcast is all about, which is the art of bombing.
My bad.
No, that's okay. So, yeah, I want to hear a story about a time where you felt like you bombed or had a really bad show.
So I remember this one was fucking horrible. So I did my first show at Laughs, and I asked to come back and produce some more shows, and they were like, "No, we'll put you on our Laugh Off competition." And I was about 6 months in, right? And we were supposed to do 7 minutes, and I wasn't fucking ready. It was fucking horrible. So they had me go first, and I started with my Dante joke, and whatever. And then I went into my fuck my students joke. And they're like, "You fuck your students?" Mm-hmm. And just shut down on me. Right, and then I try to tell, you know, I make my white students call me master, and they're like, "Oh, so you're reverse racist too."
Oh, jeez.
Right, and I was just like, fuck, right? And so we got about to the fourth or fifth minute, and I was still going, and I was just looking around the room, and it was crickets, and luckily I had a friend there, and they were like, "Keep going, Dante!" And I was just like, "Sit down! You're not helping!" And that was one of them. I think the worst actual bomb I felt, though, was, I don't know, there was a post on Displaced Comedians yesterday about by Andrew Brunello about doing a show. I don't know if you saw that.
Somebody
got on there and asked what the crowd was. So then he made another post about somebody asking about the crowd and what they looked like, and I thought that was kind of stupid. Until I remembered you asked me to tell a bomb story. So I went to Seattle's Broadway neighborhood. Do you know what that means?
I have no idea.
That's our LGBTQ capital of our city, basically.
Okay.
So when you're on that show, right? It's one of those where I was sitting there and I got to the show, and it's a high LGBTQ community, right? And then it's also a high, I don't know, non-cis white male. Is that the best way of saying it, right?
Probably, yeah.
Right, without getting too political, right?
Sending people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And then the cis white males are like, "This is bullshit, this is bullshit." Anyway. So I went in there, and they're just like, I guess for me, I found there's a barrier between strong alpha males and the LGBTQ community. And what I mean by that is there's a toxicity, a masculine toxicity within the black community, but we're still not white. We're still minorities, right? Mm-hmm. And so I went there, and it just didn't feel comfortable. I didn't feel comfortable, I'm going to be honest. And then my jokes weren't comfortable for them either. And it was like, I don't know how to combat that. Like, if your white fragility gets hurt about me making jokes about white people, you got to remember I'm half white, right? And it just didn't go over well. And I don't think I gave a fuck either. I think that was part of the problem. Like, you ever go in there and do your jokes and be like, "Yeah, I'm going to piss some people off, and I kind of want to." And I guess that's where I've had to grow up from, understanding that my comedy isn't not growing up, I just own it now. But then I was more trying to be a social justice warrior with my comedy, whereas now I'm just being me.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was one of those where it was like my racial jokes didn't hit, and they were like, "Oh, this, that." And then there's like, well, okay, maybe they're not for you. And that's the biggest thing I've had to learn. I haven't had the no laughs bomb before, but that was about as close as it got. You know what I mean? I've mm-hmm. never just had the complete silence. Luckily, maybe I'm fucking calling it out, maybe it will happen now, thanks.
I don't think anybody ever has a complete set without no laughs at all. Even when they get pity laughs, I mean, there's still there. But you can definitely tell when you're bombing.
Yeah.
Or it's yeah, sense going had, bad.
I've never had the complete bomb, but I've bombed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm trying my best not to, jinx myself, but also remember, right, that it's also, I think part of this I talked to somebody out is most of the time you bomb is when I feel like you don't set yourself up for success. So you put yourself in a room you're not ready for. You lie about how much time you can do, right?
Yeah, that's a big one, actually. That's one of the biggest factors in the bombing. And this podcast is proof of that. Many of these stories start off with, I took a gig that was X amount of time, but I only had like 5 minutes.
I'm glad you said that because I talked to somebody about that the other day, and I was like, I have never done that. Like, I'm headlining. I've been in comedy almost two and a half years, right? And I've never really headlined a show.
Yeah.
I haven't tried to. I haven't went out my way to. And now I'm finally headlining one of my shows in Idaho because it's mixed and misidentified, which is me, mm-hmm. right? And then I've hosted there so much. The last time we did a weekend, the whole crowd feedback is we want to hear more from Dante. We'd like to hear him do a set. And so mixed and misidentified is me. Mixed and misidentified is my baby, right? All my jokes go along with that line of entertainment. But one of the things I told somebody is I don't really book more than 10, myself for 10 to 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's it. Well, you've got 30 to 45 minutes worth of material. Yeah, but I know I've got a quality 10, 15 minutes that I can do anyway. I bat 360 with this, right? I can use a different stance and bat 250. But no, I want to be Ichiro, you know what I mean? And bat as good as I can. So I think that's where, personally, I've become more of a producer than a comedian, right? Mm-hmm. And by doing so, it's caused me to become a better comedian for my producers. And when you do that, which means you don't sign up for more time you can do, you tell them exactly how vulgar you are, right? You show up on, like, even with this, I was in here at 12:45,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
Waiting on you, because yep. that's what I want everybody to do for me, right? So by learning to be a better producer, it's truly made me into a more efficient professional comedian, because I'm only treating other producers and people who book me the way I would like to be treated. And that has helped out a shit ton.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That the having mutual respect and that thing and goes a long way. Just that, like, that's one of the things I always talk about is just some of the most successful people that I know, they're the nicest people I know. Like, just not being a dick to people is huge. But going back to that, to being self-aware, that is definitely huge. You know, because that you get... You know, I produce here and there. I've kind of backed off on a lot of my producing just because I'm only concentrating on my own comedy right now because I'm going to record an album in August. So I'm only worried about really getting myself booked. But I get hit up by people all the time, and I always ask them. I'm always like, well, how much time can you do? And they'll throw out a number. I'm like, but how much time can you do? And they're like, I just told you. I'm like, yeah, but what I'm really asking is how much quality time can you do? You know, like how much time can you go up and have a good, solid, consistent set with consistent laughs all the way through? And then they think about it again, and then they're like, not nearly as much time as I told you.
What I tell, and you know what I usually do? I have it. If somebody tells me they do 10, you know what? I give them a 5-minute set.
Yeah, well, no, there's that, too. I say, show me a video. I mean, that's, you know, if I don't think that they can do a certain amount of time, I'll say, give me a video of you doing this much time. I want to see this set, too, because that's, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, with cameras and everything, it's pretty easy to get video of a length. And even at my level, I've had that where, you know, I'm working on booking my own shows. And I had somebody ask if I had a headlining set, because that's what I was asking them about headlining. And I was like, yeah, I absolutely do. Here you go. And then I got booked for it. So.
And I think that's the other part is there's, you said a couple of things that most producers, except for myself, do, is there's, I think there's sometimes a thing that's too much screening, but also understanding what you're looking for, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think so many people out there put, I need somebody to do 20 minutes, and then they don't put that. I need somebody who could do their own kind of show. Like, if you, you know what I mean? Like those descriptors in the, hey, what does a headliner mean to me? Well, if you're a headliner, that means you could probably run this show yourself. Mm-hmm. If people just showed up to see you, they'd be happy with that, right?
Yep.
If you can't say that, then you're not my type of headliner.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I don't know, I guess, how it is up where you're at, but I lived down in Southern California for quite a few years, and the idea of a headliner down there was not the same as the idea of a headliner in the Midwest either. You know, there's comics that they're headlining shows out there, and they're only doing 15 to 20 minutes, where, you know, out here, a headliner's got to be able to do 45 to 60 minutes easily, you know.
But, you know, and that's where I'm looking at changing things. I don't think I book anybody for more than about 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of people go, why do you, go ahead.
I was just going to say, but are you booking more showcase style shows versus, you know, out here? Because that's the other thing. In California, they're showcase style shows where you might have 8 to 10 comics on the show. And then, you know, out here, most shows in the Midwest are 2 to 3 people. That's it. You know,
no matter where I go, I book the same thing. We book about 5 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason for that. It's so like I've been kind of like, when you come to my shows on the road, it's like a party. We've got 2 Airbnbs. I cook for people on Saturday, right? We basically go everywhere together, right? Because I want to build a sense of community.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to get along with each other. If you're a shitty person, just don't come to my show. And the reason I say that is because, you know, it's that was the gatekeeper thing. He's an asshole, but he's funny.
Yeah, yeah, you hear that a lot.
Fuck that. I'd rather have people who... You know what I mean?
Oh, I agree with that. I'm not behind that philosophy at all. I want people that I want to work with and that I can, you know, get along at very little, at the very least get along with them, you know, where, but if they're a total asshole, I don't care how funny anybody is. I don't want to work with them. In fact, I just worked with somebody here recently and they weren't necessarily, there was a situation that happened. And even that, I'm like, you know, I don't know that I want to work with this person anymore. And it wasn't like they didn't do anything directly to me, but it was a little shady what happened. And so I'm like, even that, I don't want to work with that, you know, because, yeah, it all has to do with, you know, you're building relationships and it's, you know, you got to be nice to people and you got to treat everybody with respect. So. And you can't be shady to each other.
No. And not only that, I think my biggest one is I want to have fun with you people.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest reason why I quit most of my jobs is because I didn't like the job. I didn't want to, you know what I mean? I didn't like fucking people there. They say 90% of people quit not because of anybody other than the fact they don't like their boss. So if that's true, right, why aren't we doing more to avoid that, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a big big fan of doing your own thing, like, whatever it is. It doesn't even have to be comedy. The whole, like, entrepreneurship. Because I'm that guy that has hated all my jobs.
Yeah, I'm that guy, too. Like, fuck, I don't want to do it. I don't know. I don't want to listen to you, fucking, like, Bob. You're an idiot.
I'm
like,
only here to pay so I can pay my rent, and hopefully I can then spend more time on the other thing I want to do.
Right? Like, that's the whole idea is, you know, and I don't think a lot of people really get that, right? They're just like, I'm going to be a slave to this company because that's what I'm supposed to do. And it's like, nah, man, don't sell yourself short. Stop.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, just stop.
Yep. And then, you know, and there are people that are perfectly happy with the job that they have and that's all they want to aspire to, and more power to them. If that's what makes you happy, do what makes you happy. But I feel like a lot of people, that's not what makes them happy. They just don't, like you said, they just don't want to aspire to something or a lot of times it's fear. A lot of people, you know, that having that sense of security is more important than taking risks and doing something you love. Because, you know, a lot of times it is risky. We already talked about how unhealthy being a comic is financially.
Exactly. You know, I think Jackie Pearl has one of my favorite jokes. She says, You know, if my life wasn't going bad enough moving from Hawaii to Sacramento, I decided to be a comic also because that's financially responsible, isn't it? Woo! Bitch, that's too real. You can't. You know what I mean? Leave that joke at home. That one kind of hurt my feelings. I don't like you. But yeah, that's the whole idea. And I don't. It's just one of those. It's just one of those where you've got to. I don't know. I don't like. Like I said. I make more money off of my shirts than I do the shows. Right. I'm making more money probably being a speaker for autism than I will by actual stage time. But that's not really why we do this. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also a problem a lot of people have when we talk about bombing and getting into the wrong situations. Is that they're trying to make up for whatever's going on or make up in life, whatever they're doing, whether it's therapy or lack of money, by doing stage time. But if that's the way you're doing things, it's not going to get you anywhere.
Mm-hmm. That's one of my biggest pet peeves when I hear a comic go on stage and say, well, I'm here because I can't afford therapy. I'm just like, oh. This is probably not going to be that great of a set.
No way. Whatever gave you that fucking clue, right?
I'm just like, oh, here we go. Here we go.
Right? And so, yeah, that's exactly it. How many of us can really be honest with ourselves and say that, right? Like, yep. I don't think I have a ton of jokes that are therapy jokes. No, I have some jokes that come from trauma and pain, but I don't really do any of the ones that are just like, what the fuck? Will somebody get this guy off the fucking stage?
It's like, yeah. It's easy to, too. Like, you gotta, it's comics. Comics forget this all the time, you know, because we are very egocentric and full of ourselves that, you know, it's easy to forget that while we're doing it because it's something we love, we still, our job is to make that audience happy and have a laugh. I mean, that's potentially what we're aiming for. And if you go up there and we make them sadder than when they came to the show, that's definitely not a good thing.
Well, yeah, actually, I remember I wrote a whole set about my personal experience, right? And what I mean by that is I wrote a set about talking about I was homeless at the time and losing my wife and my kids. And so I was doing jokes about being homeless. And they're funnier than a motherfucker, but I couldn't figure out why the audience wasn't laughing. And so I got done with one of the jokes, and the lady came up to me and said, here's $20. I hope this helps you not sleep in your car tonight. And I was like, well, first off, that's not enough. Second, I'm choosing to sleep in my car instead of living with other people. And I'm going to have somewhere to live soon. It's okay. And then I went, oh, fuck, that's the problem, is everybody feels bad for me.
Yep.
Then I started making the same jokes, but I said my buddy was homeless. No, they were funnier. Fuck.
Yeah. It's
they could laugh then.
It's amazing how changing that perspective, you know what I mean? Like, whose perspective the story's coming from. In your situation where it was you were the main character versus your buddy being the main character, and how when you were the main character, people were just too sad and for you versus, well, it's his friend. We can laugh at his friend, even though it's the same situation.
Yeah, like it's the same fucking joke, but now you're able to laugh. Oh, whatever, I don't care. You're still laughing, right? And yep. We talk about bombing, and I think part of the reason why a lot of people bomb is because they punch down. They really don't get what that means and why it's a bad thing. I tell a joke called Lady Gang where all I do is literally make fun of women for drinking at work. But the joke premise is I'm joining Lady Gang and going through Pledge Week. So now that I'm part of Lady Gang, the joke, and I never did it without that, but I always did it that way. Women love the joke by the end. They're cheering for me and woo, right? But if I'd done it the other way around, just be like, yeah, bitches get drunk at work. Oh, yeah. I'd be careful.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Faster. You would have got to the get drunk and you would have been done.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Bitches do what? Boo! Oh, bitch. Call me bitch again. Boo! Right? Like, oh fuck, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well that was a fun short lived career.
All right, I guess he'll go back to bouncing people again. He better do some, right? Like, Guess I'll be doing security. All right.
You can catch me at the door when you're leaving.
Basically, yeah.
Oh, that's too funny. When you bomb, you have that. It's coined the bumming of bombing here in the art of bombing, the dreadful feeling you get after a bad set. How long does that typically last for you, and how does it affect you, if at all?
I don't know, you know, not to sound conceited, but I've been decent since I started. And you know what I mean? We all see those comics who you watch them the first time, and you're like, hey, he's funny. How long have you been doing comedy? And they're like, my first time. And you're like, you'll be okay.
Yeah,
right? I was one of those people. Sam Miller was at my first set. I opened for him. I still do my master's joke. I still do my poot the joke. There are a couple jokes I still do because I had wrote them. I'd been wanting to be a comedian my whole life, right? So this wasn't something like COVID happened and I decided to do comedy. It wasn't a New Year's Eve resolution. It was my mom died and I finally decided to chase my dreams. So when I have had a bad set or bombed, I just go, fuck it, shit happens.
Yeah.
And I don't think enough people fucking do that. I think especially when we talk about the newer comics, they get this idea that they need to do all this great material, right? And so they go everywhere doing different sets, and they have no clue what's good or not.
Yeah. You definitely see that a lot with newer comics, too. They think every time they perform, they have to have a brand new set. And then none of their jokes get polished. So you don't get, like, a polished act. And that
bingo.
Yeah.
That's what I was getting at. So for me, like, and I'll tell – this is a great story to tell. So 2 years ago, I did the Black Comedy Festival. My buddy Quentin Jones was riding down with me, and he was like, dude, I got like 35 minutes of material. It's great, cool. I have the best 10 minutes out of anybody in the car. And he looked, and we had a white comic in the back who was coming with us. He didn't get to perform because it's the Black Comedy Festival, right? But he was just
I bet you
newbies,
he was mad
right?
about that. No.
No, he knew better. I said, I'm going to try to get you on. He's nobody. He's riding in the car. Obviously, he gets it, right?
Yeah.
I don't let those kind of people in my fucking car. That's how it starts, right? Fuck you. Get the fuck out of my car. Oh, yeah, there's a whole – you didn't know. There's going to be some F-bombs in this episode. If you guys are listening, if you don't like that, hang up now. But
I feel like if they were offended by our language, they would have hung up within the first 5 minutes. So
anyways, right? fucking, but those are all different fucks. It was fucking, fuck, fuck, fuck. Those are all totally different adjectives, by the way. But Quentin turned around and looked at him because Quinn started laughing. Quentin goes, no, he's right. He's got a solid 10. So we went down there. And I got 5 minutes on my first show. I crushed it. We left, went, did some mics, came back. Quentin got 10 minutes. I was jealous, so I got another 5 minutes, right? I did the other half of my set and fucking crushed. Guess how his 10 minutes went? Do you know why? Because he didn't know what in the fuck he wanted to do.
Yeah.
He had so much shit to pull from that he didn't know what set to do, right? And so, like, when you talk about bomb, I don't bomb because I've been doing the same 10 minutes for the last 2.5 years. You know what I mean? Like, I built up to it. Like, some things have changed. Don't get me wrong. But if you watch it, I'm always start with my name's Dante. It's spelled all fucked up. It's D-U-A-N-T-E. So I get Duante, Dwayne. Like, the T silent. You know, it's not, you know, and I go through the. So there's no, and I've polished those so well that I've added tags here and there. And now I've got a new tag. People ask me if I know how to spell my name, and I go, that's racist. Black people don't know how to read. We know how to spell. Right? I found that the other day on shrooms, but it's been hitting, right? But my point is, like, I've never – that was my whole thing is it was like I'm going to do the same set everywhere. Every open mic I go to, I used to do the same 10 minutes. Now that I'm better, I'll open with the Dante Dwayne thing, right? And my Gainal joke, and then I'll end with 3 or 4 minutes of new stuff, right? But I'm no longer thinking that it's a good idea to go out there. Here's a new – you just paid me to cook you a meal. Here's something I've never cooked for somebody before. Try this.
Yeah. There's a lot of comics, though, that's their mentality. They're like – anytime – it's funny, too, because I just like, oh, man, I wish I could be that oblivious. That's how I feel sometimes when I hear a comic like, oh, I got a show. I got to write a new set for this show. And I'm just like, oh, man, I wish I could be that oblivious to what's happening. Have that kind of confidence.
I've done some of those. Like I've done these workshops, right? And I love doing them. Like my new workshop this time, I think it is Final Straw. So my topic has to be the final straw. I already got an idea what it is, but I usually sit there while we're going through and I jot down a couple notes and then I go off the top of my head. I don't think I could, because I'm one of those people who, when I write, it's right before. And even when I wrote papers and I've got a master's, even when I had homework for my master's, we did it the night before. I'd get all my resources and then that's just how I function, right? So to hear these people that like a week before want to, when people tell me that shit, I go, please don't do that. Why do you laugh so hard at that, Dan?
Because it's funny. You're like, please don't do that. You get it. That I get it. It's funny to me because
please don't do that to me. I want what I you know that set you did that got you booked? Do that.
Yes.
That's why I fucking booked you.
Exactly.
And I think my biggest example of that is I was on a podcast for somebody like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why they brought me on the podcast was a suit man. Now, in your case, I don't know why you brought me on. I'm not saying why you brought me on, but I knew they were bringing me on because I was Suit Man Productions, right? So he goes, hey, why don't you tell us about your comedy? And I said, I'm not going to do that. I said, the whole reason why you guys invited me here is because of my diversity and being Suit Man Productions. It'd be an insult to tell you about my comedy when it's my productions that got me on this show.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think enough people think in that aspect. That if somebody invites you to do something, it's because of what they've seen you do, not what they think you can do. Especially in comedy, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Now, if you've worked with me two or three times, well then, yeah, Dan, fuck yeah, write a set for the next show. I've booked you three. You're fucking funny. I like you, right? I've had you three or four times. I obviously trust your humor. But you wouldn't go on a first date with somebody and be like, I think I'm going to try to cook her some Italian food. I've never cooked Italian food before. She's from Italy, you know, but I'm going to try it. How do you like my Spam Parmigiana? How do you like that?
Oh, Spam Parmigiana. That's funny. I love it.
Not too bad at that. But that's like the truth, and I think that's all it is. I think bombing 90% of the time is people's egos ahead of themselves, and two, people, there's no way, like, there's a ton of comics out there, and I'll name a few that I know of. There's one local comic, Tawana Buchanan. She goes by the Controversial Queen. She's done a good job at usually going off her head, but then she told me the other day, she's like, I can't do that anymore. It doesn't always work. And I was like, no shit. You know what I mean? Like, I told you that months ago, right? There's another comic out here named Armani Jones. He goes all over the country. He's a little bit of a fucking troll. I can't stand the guy. But for the most part, he's pretty good at doing comedy off his head. But when he gets into a show where he has to do a showcase, he fucking bombs.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think people get that is when you're, if you're, you could be fucking Mad Dog 2020. You can be Alizé. You can be Cisco. You can be Boone's Farm. But when we go to a sophisticated party, guess what? That's not wine. Right?
Yeah.
And I think so many people are successful at being off the top open micers and just saying bullshit that gets laughs. That when you get to a professional environment where there's 135 people in front of you and they want you to laugh and they're not all hood or not all white, it's a diverse crowd.
Yep.
You miss. And that's the problem. And one of the biggest things I told people, the reason why I don't really bomb, do you know how many clubs I performed at in my lowly 2.5 years? Yes.
Yeah. Well, being that you live in the Seattle area, there's, I don't know, what is it, like 5 or 6 clubs in that area? Are you talking different clubs or just how many times you performed in a
different
club?
Different, not just comedy clubs, but different venues.
Oh, venues. Oh, okay. Well, that's different because there's a lot of venues. I mean,
yeah, I'm at about 300 to 400.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay, that changes things because there's a difference between comedy club and venue.
But that's the whole thing I try to get newbies to understand. I perform 300 to 400 different venues.
Mm-hmm.
That means I don't have to have a home crowd advantage to feel like I'm funny, right? Yep. So many comics bomb because they only go to two mics, right?
Yep. And they only do material that works there.
Right. Well, that it's not that they're only do, but their material only is going to work there because everybody already likes you and they believe in you or they think you're funny. And one of my best places to do comedy locally is this place called Teradice, because I grew up in West Seattle. A lot of people there know me as a kid. They know me from high school, right? But I stopped performing there after a while. People are like, why aren't you performing? Because you guys are going to laugh no matter what the fuck I say. You guys, I'm Suit Man. You guys know who the fuck I am. You know my last name. You know my dad. You know my kids. You're not going to disrespect me and not laugh. I want to go where somebody, I don't want to go to Cheers. I want to go the opposite, where nobody knows my name.
Yep. Yeah, man, that's definitely how you get better as a performer, getting put in situations, you know, like that. I mean, honestly, that's why I moved back to the Midwest, because I knew I could get in more situations like that, you know, where I'm traveling across the Midwest doing shows in little towns all over. You gotta be able to be universal, you know. You can't, and that was one thing when I was in California. It's like, you know, a lot of the material worked in California, but on the road, would it really work? Because, you know, it you get that, some of it's regional stuff, but it's being comfortable. You're in a comfortable situation, and in order to get better, you have to be uncomfortable.
I don't think people are used to that.
No, absolutely not. I was just going to say, that's part of being self-aware, too, and a lot of people aren't self-aware, either.
Well, that was the thing that I think, so as a my first year comedy, but my sophomore year, because actually I take that back, because I started like in August, so it'd be like my second semester of comedy, not even the second year. Hold on one second. Sorry. Hold on.
Okay.
Fuck. I hate it when I have so many things fucking going on, but that's part of what I'm here for. So the thing is that when so many, there we go. So when my second semester came, right, my goal was to do 100 a set every day, right? And if I look back to, sorry, give me one second. God damn it. I hate fucking needy people sometimes. that's the hardest part about doing this fucking job as a producer, is I'm not allowed to just tell people, leave me the fuck alone, even though I want to. But my goal was to do a set every day, right? And so I think I got to the 100th, and I got to like the middle of March, and I was keeping track, and then the haters would be, oh, Sir, what are you on? Set 89 today? And I didn't understand that they were really hating. They were mad.
Mm-hmm.
That I was taking the chance to go on the road and do every single fucking mic in Seattle. Now, I've done most of them. I haven't done some of the ones in Everett, but literally everything in Seattle, Tacoma, Bremerton, South Pierce County, all of those, even all the way down to Vomity and Lacey, I've done their open mics. And people are like, why were you doing that? And I was like, well, it's real easy for other comics, because that's usually who's at open mics, who don't like you, to not laugh at your jokes.
Yep.
But it's hard for comics who don't know you to not laugh at your jokes.
Yep.
And so by going to different places, you're going to have different people hear your shit and give you perspective. And if my joke's funny in Chico, California, and it's joke funny in Boise, Idaho, and it's funny, and the one that really killed me is I've been to Canada 3 times and did Vancouver, BC, and the jokes are still fucking funny there. Then I'm funny. But when you're hitting your head against the wall and you're going to your local comedy club and nobody tells you you're that funny and you keep going and most of the comedians aren't laughing because they don't like you, you start to doubt yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened to me.
Yeah, that's very true. That's a definitely a good perspective on that, because it's easy to get that self-doubt when you're just going to the, you know, performing in front of the same people. And you're right. If other comics don't like you, they're going to choose not to laugh at you, whether the joke's funny or not. Which, you know, it's really sad. It goes back to the just how insecure each comic is on themselves, that they project it onto other people and just try to be, you know, shitty and doing the whole gatekeeper stuff.
Well, that's the problem, is it was done to them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just a constant cycle.
It's just a cycle.
Yep.
And that's the, like, I broke that cycle. I don't know if you've ever seen me ask, but you know, when I book people, I don't even view their footage.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. If I don't know who you are, or we don't have enough friends in common, I just give you 5 minutes because I don't think anybody can fuck that up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, right? No, but you get what I'm saying. Everybody deserves a chance to do 5 minutes, right?
Yep.
If it goes bad, whatever, right? But that's also why I do showcases instead of these. I don't believe in the three-man comedy show. I just don't fucking believe in that because it's boring. I don't care how funny you are. It's hard for me to listen to anybody more than 20, 25 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. And if we go more than 20, 25 minutes, I get up, I'm going to miss something. I want to take a piss. I want to grab a drink. I got to miss your set. Like 20, 25 minutes, I can go without a drink or piss or whatever, right? And so to me, it's just weird. And fuck, lost my point there for a second. You know, it happens. Fucking talk.
Right? Speaking of bombing, no.
yeah, right. Crickets, fuck you, Dan. I'm not bombing. It's your fault. You booked me for this garbage. No, no, I do sound like a shitty comic.
Yeah, okay, now here we go. End broadcast.
End broadcast. Delete this motherfucker. yeah, no worries. I'm definitely not paying you 3 cents, right? Like, but it was one of those where when I book people, I'm not gatekeeping. That's what I was getting at.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a woman? Then you can apply for this show. Are you a senior citizen? You can apply for this show. I respond back to people in the order that they messaged me on the show. I don't really play favorites, except for the fact that when I announce I'm doing a style of show, usually my friends will be, I want on that. No, well, fuck, okay. So before I can ask for anybody else, I fill my friends in first because they're smart enough to know that if I ask for people, I'm going to find them. So don't, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't do that gatekeeping anymore. What I'm doing is I'm doing demographic keeping. If you're white, male, guess what? I got two shows you could be on. My Give Love Laugh, which is a donation show, so I'm not paying you. And then my Santa's Naughty List show, which means you got to be kind of a perverted comic because it's a naughty list show.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a clean white male comic, I probably don't have a lot of shows for you.
That's okay.
But guess what?
As a clean male straight comic, that's fine. There's plenty of other paid gigs out there that I...
What? Can you say that again for the fuckers who aren't fucking listening in the back, please?
Yeah, as a straight cis white male that is a clean comic, let me tell you, there's plenty of work out there for that demographic.
Oh, so you're not mad at Suit Man because I'm not booking you, Dan? Can you fucking tell everybody fucking else?
Yeah, you all heard right, it here. I am not offended or mad at all.
And you still support what I do. No fucking way. Are you serious? And then somebody, like one of the white comics out here, just moved out here from Austin. You heard, you know who Aaron Yokowski is?
The name doesn't.
But he's kind of a burly, rough around the edges white guy. Really, he's from Texas, so he tells some non-PC comedy, right? But he saw me at Laughs, the comedy club out here, right? And I walked in, and he's like, "Hey, Suit Man!" And gave me a big old hug and turned around, and everybody was like... Right? And so he sees me later, and he's like, "What happened there?" And I was like, "Well, I did a big show for him there. I made like $1,100 on a Thursday." Like, they wrote me a check for $1,100 on a Thursday before Memorial Day. That's ridiculous. Nobody sells out a club on a Thursday before a weekend, let alone somebody who's not a headliner, local, or any of that shit, right? And so when I asked them to come back, they're like, "Oh, we'll think about it. We'll let you know." That insulted the fuck out of me. Nobody else is doing what I do. No other. When the only person you could say did better was Ellen and Hannibal Buress, and this is my first show producing ever, you don't give me another chance, fuck you, right? So I took my shit to Columbia City Theater, and I've been successful. And he was like, "Well, if they're going to treat you like that, I don't want to do business with them." I said, "No, don't be fucking stupid. I'm not booking you. You're not going to get booked by Suit Man, really. You're a white guy. So go get your money where you can, right? Go get that money that I can't get. Enjoy it. Because trust me, I'm not really booking a lot of you guys because you guys can go anywhere and get your money." And he just kind of looked at me weird. And I was like, that's the difference. I guess that's the difference between me and a lot of these producers/companies/whatever's out here. is I don't give a fuck what you do outside of me. As long as when I tell you to be there at 6:45, you're there at 6:45.
Yep.
And I think that that whole allegiance program, I'm working to break that shit. Like, I want, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm really, I'm totally against it. If you, because for the most part, clubs aren't taking care of people.
No. I mean, they're taking care of the people they think they have to, and even at that, it's not a lot of people. But to start wrapping up here, this has been a great.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine. This has been a great conversation. I got a couple things I want to talk to you about real quick. Going back to the bombing, when you have a joke, this is just a question I love asking. When you have a joke and you're telling it and you feel it not going how you want it to go, what goes through your mind as you're telling that joke?
Fuck! Sorry, was that too loud?
I should have knew that was coming.
You know me, you figured it out right now. Right? No, but a couple of different things. Like, so there's two things I think that go to making me a good comedian. I was a teacher for a long time, and I've done public speaking a lot. So I always make eye contact when I'm telling my jokes. And so I usually, if a joke's going bad, I try to look at somebody else.
Yep.
And find somebody that's giving me buy-in so I can at least, like you're doing right now, see the one guy nodding and feel better about telling this joke because at least that fucker liked it, right? And I usually will say that. Well, this joke was for the Mexican fucker in the back. I don't care if you white people laugh. At least Pedro liked it, right? And then the other part is I think I usually think is, did I set it up right? Now, what I mean by that is I have a joke where I say I like to fuck my students. And I said, I said, people always ask me, well, I want to teach high school or middle school or elementary school. And it's real simple. I like to fuck my students. And that's kind of frowned upon at those other institutions. Now, the first time I told it was like that without telling my master's joke before that, where I talk about being a college teacher and having a master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
So did I set the joke up right? I think so many times. And then I think the other one was I did a joke about me being deaf. It was one of my black jokes. My first time back out on the scene was at Tacoma Comedy Club here. And I went and did my 15 minutes, and I said one of the jokes where I say nigga. And somebody was like, I don't think they knew you were black. What? Well, yeah, I just went up there and opened with my joke, and I just did some all-new material. That's why I don't ever do that, right? Is because if you're just doing all new material, especially when some of your jokes are add-ons to parts of other jokes or going to squeeze into another joke, if you know what I mean,
mm-hmm.
You do them separate. They lose their the foreground that you give, right? Or the background that you've usually given because you've done all these other different jokes. And so they know I'm a teacher. They know I'm black and all these different things. So now in minute 8, 9, and 10, when I branch off on shit, my original 9 to 10 minutes told you I'm mixed, I'm black, I'm deaf, and a whole bunch of other shit. So now I have the freedom to say those things. Those are the things I usually think about because it's not always there's so much more to, you know what I mean? Like so many people want to fix the punchline. Well, maybe it's not even the punchline. Have you thought about the jokes you're telling around it?
Mm-hmm. No, that's very good point. You got to have, sometimes it's about building up and getting people to know you, you know, because mm-hmm. if they don't.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, because if they don't have certain information about you, they're probably not going to laugh at certain jokes. Because one, they won't believe that you have the right to have that perspective, or you know, they'll find some reason to be offended by it because they think they should be offended by it, or whatever it might be. So definitely having that background information helps.
And that's the thing is, I don't think we always think about that. And then sometimes you got to remember, not all jokes are for every crowd.
Yeah.
I'm going to offend some people sometimes. Not every joke's going to be awesome, but it's up to me to make sure that I'm being better. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's not anybody else's job but mine to make sure that my jokes are funny.
And that's a good lead into the next thing I like to ask. Analyze your set to, you know, to try to get better? What are things that you look for? When you're going back and trying to figure out what happened and how you can make your next set better?
I think the first thing is I used to always record what I do. So now that I'm new, not so much in not so much like I'm not in comedy, you know what I mean? But now that I'm not so much worried about how good I do because I get a ton of time, whether it be hosting or whatever channel it is, right? I don't do that as much, right? But I think that is honestly the best way to do it is by recording yourself. I don't want the video. I want the audio only. A lot of people, why is that? Because the video, right? You're going to watch yourself. You're going to see your mannerisms, right? But you're going to be so engaged in watching what you're doing that you're not listening. And I think those are a lot of things that people aren't, not even so much thinking about, but it's just listen. Shut the fuck up and listen, right? And if you do that, you're going to hear maybe a hiccup here and there. Did I say this right? And then not only that, but usually you can hear you put it in the back of the room. Sometimes you hear the guy go, oh, fuck, right? Mm-hmm. You hear the guy say something that you really usually don't get to see or hear. And so I think that's another one is people really need to take the time to analyze everything. So were you sober when you went there? Right? Was it a new room, right? Did you show up early and get to know some of the people that were there, or did you just think you were going to show up and be funny? Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Are you – and I think a lot of this comes into the preparation. If you want to make your set better, here's how you do it. Without doing anything major, show up 15 minutes early, shake everybody's hand as they come in, and tell the staff thank you, and shake everybody else's hand on the way out. By doing those three things, the crowd will be happier to see you and want to hear you.
Yep, because now they feel like you're a friend.
Ah! Sales! Yep. Sales tactic! Hey, down the... Because I'm always in a suit, right? So first off, everybody already wonders who the fuck I am anyways. There's a black guy here in a suit. This is either the mafia's fucking accountant or a pro wrestling manager, one of the two, right? And so you disarm them that way. They know you're a real person. So now when you go up, they're like, hey, that's the guy I saw earlier, right? And then when you're happier and nicer to the staff, fuck, they like you too, right? And then when you thank people on the way out, guess what you end up getting?
Fans. Yeah, absolutely.
Nope, another one. Feedback.
Yeah, that too. Well, I feel like getting fans is part of getting feedback. Because if you get fans, then the feedback is they liked you enough to be a fan. It's a form of feedback. Form of feedback. Yeah. All right, well, this has been great. But before we go, I like to end more positive. I like to do some fun stuff at the end of the podcast. The first thing, is there a song that gets you pumped up? I have an Art of Bombing playlist on Spotify where I add songs that get comics pumped up, not necessarily for performing, but just for whatever.
So I've got two songs. My favorite song right now, there's two of, I'm actually looking at my Pandora. I almost want to play it while we're on here. The audio comes in, right? So the first one is real simple. It's by Rocketeer. Far East Movement. It's called Rocketeer. Yeah, it's just a song about, like, just take my hand and fly. It's here we come. Come with me. There's a whole wide world for us to see. Take my hand. Close your eyes. I'm a rocketeer. Let's fly. Right? And the other one would be Try by Bass. It's a song, B.A.S. Boz. He's works with J. Cole. And it says, I know I made it. I'm so thankful for you now. I'm so elated. I had to get, I don't know. It's just, he talks about being in a good mood. And then last but not least is a classic. Don't worry, be happy.
That's
if I'm ever in a bad mood, you turn on Bobby McFerrin's.
Can never go wrong with that. And then favorite gig that you've done so far? What's a fun favorite gig you've done?
you know, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to toot my own horn. It's mine. I did WAP and I did Dark Brew in Boise. And we had an Airbnb for 3 days, for two nights, 3 days. And the reason why I say mine is because, like I said, it's like the real world. So I'm bringing in six or seven out-of-state comedians to do both shows, right? There's two condos next to each other. We're cooking for each other. We're hanging out for 38 hours straight or 48 hours straight. And there's nothing that really beats that. There's no, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's a party. It's a show. It's a collective. And then just the response I get from people. I think the best one that I've been a part of, would be, I don't know. Like, Nate Jackson. So Nate Jackson just opened a club in Tacoma. He's got Nate Jackson Super Funny Comedy Club. I was a part of his funniest motherfucker competition last Wednesday. The place was fucking packed. The people were there to laugh. Even though I didn't make it to the next round, he gave me a shout out, said I killed it. That doesn't fucking matter. But to see a black-owned comedy club is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to give shout-outs to that. It's actually the largest club outside of L.A. It holds 400 fucking people.
Nobody's got that. Holy shnikes.
Yeah, it might even be bigger than what's in L.A. I think it's the biggest one east of the Mississippi. I think Chicago's the only club bigger. But, yeah, it's brand new. Mm-hmm. And so to go on that stage and just feel like that's where I want to be one day, the only difference is I don't plan on ever booking the major leagues. I'm always going to keep doing it the way I'm doing it. 20 years from now when I'm fucking rich, it's still going to be comics under 10 years coming to do 10 to 20 minutes and maybe a local headliner. I don't ever plan on changing that, right? And so for me, it was different. Being at Nate's, it was huge, and then there was nine of us on stage instead of the regular three because it was a competition, yeah, so you put the variety and all that. And that was a great fucking environment. And even though I didn't make it, it was fucking awesome. You know what I mean? Like, it was fucking awesome.
Yep. Oh, that's beautiful. All right, last thing I like to do is a fun little game called Pick a Number. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 20. I'm going to ask you that corresponding question. It may be comedy-related, or it may just be a fun question.
Oh, this is simple. 5.
5. All right. Oh, this is... it's comedy. How did you start comedy? Or how did comedy start for you?
We already answered this. Yeah. I gotta get a different one.
Give her number. Like,
let's go 15.
15. All right, here we go. When somebody finds out what you do or where you're from, what question do they always ask you? This is a fun one. Comedy, I feel.
I got two answers for you. So when I tell people I'm from Seattle, especially black people, they go, "That y'all got niggas out there?"
Oh, that's funny.
I was dying. I was laughing so hard I had to drop the mic. That's the true one. It's because I say I'm from Washington, and then they go D.C., and I go no state, and then they go, "Y'all got black people?" Yeah. Like, they're not any there now because I'm here, but we have one. And then the other one is I tell people I'm a comedian and I'm a model, and they go, "Oh, I bet I could do that."
Oh, I'm surprised. Usually the...
Because those are the two things that I think people think that anybody can do.
Yes. Well, no, the reason I'm surprised is usually most people, when you tell them when a comic says that they're a comic,
I got a joke for you.
It's actually, tell me a joke. Tell me a joke. Or, yeah.
I've gotten so over that one. Because, like, usually when they ask me to tell them a joke, right, is it's just they don't know how to listen. Right? Because we don't tell, if you're a good comedian, we're not just telling, like, "Knock, knock, who's there?"
Exactly.
Kind of jokes, right?
Yep.
And it's usually, like, I'll be like, "My name's Dante, it's spelled all fucked up," and they're like, "How's it spelled?" "Shut up and listen, I'm about to tell you."
They want to make it like it's a knock-knock joke, like they have to respond.
Yeah, no, that's not how this works. Just shut the fuck up and listen for the next 3 minutes, and then it's just... So I think you're right. That may be what I get at. Tell me a joke or whatever. I just like the idea that that's the one that's unique to me.
No, I like that. Your response was great. That's just, it caught me because that's usually not one that I hear as a response, but it is a good response because I do feel
that's
like...
That's not the one I hear most, but it's up there. I'm pretty sure you'd heard those two, right? But you just, you know, I've always wanted to try comedy. I think I'm funny.
Yep. That's another popular one.
That's what I'm getting at. You just want to look at them. What makes you think you're... What the fuck? You're fucking ugly. Not funny. You're weird looking. That's not fucking funny.
I'm always like, when somebody says that to me, I'm like, well, what's stopping you? Go sign up for an open mic.
I dare you. Give it a try. Go
yeah.
ahead. Right?
Get real intense. It's like, do it. Do it right now. Go sign up. I'm sure there's an open mic somewhere.
And that's, I think that's the hardest one. No, I take that back. So when I tell them I'm a producer, well, you... Let me get on one of your shows. That's what I always hear.
Yep.
How long have you been doing? Well, I've never done it before, but let me get on one of your shows. And I go by fucking Suit Man, not Hood Man. There's a level expectation just with that name. I'm in a suit and tie. You think I'm just going to let anybody on my fucking show? Fuck you. So, yeah, that's where I'm at.
I love it. I love it. All right, well, where can people find you? Plug your social medias and web, all that.
So Instagram is suitman206. I'm not really on, I got a Twitter, but I don't fucking use it. I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm fucking old. I don't want to tweet. I barely want Instagram. Fuck you guys. I don't have a fucking Snapchat either. Don't look for me on there. And I don't have an Only. Never mind. We're not going there.
Oh, don't lie.
Fuck you, buddy. You don't know me that well. Just because you have a subscription doesn't mean you can be
model.
Yeah. Oh, you whore. I'm a professional dancer, a.k.a. stripper. Yeah, I know, I've used that one before. But Instagram is suitman206. If you go, the easiest way, though, is to go suitmancomedy.com. Everything's on there. There's an event page. There's flyers. There's ideas of what we do and why we do it. And then if you're looking on Facebook, it's Suitman Productions. If you want to find me personally, look for Duante. It's D-U-A-N-T-E Barnett.
All right. Thanks for joining me. This has been fun.
Thank you.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See you. Are we actually leaving or just...
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.